Is it true that the Teamsters Union had 5 bills in the legislature which were introduced at their request, and those bills were all introduced under your name, and that you voted in favor of all 5 of those bills? No further questions.
You'd still have to prove the agreement.
Or the understanding. I think you've gone a long way toward proving it.
I mean, this is a very common situation. The fact of the matter is that although we have a statute that says you're not supposed to receive a political contribution with promise of action, it's often implied, if not expressed.
There wouldn't be a political contribution.
Obviously, the Teamsters Union and the various other organizations do not make those contributions without some expectation of return on.
Of course, the sad part may be it may be nothing more than an expectation. Which is very often all it is.
Most often, I'd say.
Well, when you're talking in terms of public servants and bribery, there would be no way. There's no way to draft a statute to avoid some of those.
I think we go back to the question: is some of the conduct that's involved here maybe it's better handled some other way? I think we could take political contributions out of here because we handle that in another statute which requires disclosure.
Well, this, of course, bribery statute isn't intended to cover political contributions.
Oh, a pecuniary benefit?
Only if it's given upon an agreement.
The trouble is that
influence.
Yeah, but I can the questions I ask Harold, I think a lot of juries, particularly if he was kind of a ratty looking guy, would probably believe it.
I think the problem primarily is that a legislator is both a citizen and a public official.
This is where you have a big problem. But I think just the ordinary.
Of course, you had to provide a clear and convincing evidence that there was, in fact, an agreement or an understanding.
Well, yeah, but sure. You've got to remember the politician that's been accused of a crime. Most people don't trust politicians anyway.
Go along with that. Well, I think we're all agreed that this is an improvement over the present statute. The question is, can we make it any better, more realistic? Perhaps the answer is that those of us in politics should not accept lunches and rides downtown with lobbyists.
Well, I think we ought to exempt political contributions out of this. And I think the way the thing reads now is it could apply to
political. Well, I think maybe something like that.
Because we have laws that deal with the problem of political contributions through disclosure.
Yeah, but then if you do exempt them, then aren't you in effect saying, it's by statute, in effect, saying that
arose by any other name.
Mm-hmm. Well, or that their a political contribution implies an agreement or understanding as to vote and opinion.
Well, no.
See, we would argue. I would argue, were I charged under this, that sure, Teamsters gave me $5,000, but it didn't influence. It was no understanding or agreement, nor no influence upon the fact I voted for their bills was coincidental.
Just like you'd argue under a present statute, there wasn't anything corrupt about it. There was no corrupt intent here on the part of either the contributor or you.
Now, if we exempt campaign contributions, we're in effect saying that type of agreement or understanding, which otherwise would be bribery, will be handled elsewhere.
Well, what Harold was going to say, I think it'd be another problem. It would seem very easy to bribe under the guise of contributions.
Of course, this is a fact today.
This is the fact.
On the big boys play in back in Huntsville.
Well, the question is it a fact that should be dealt with in the criminal law?
Well, let's look at it this way. Is there anything wrong with a
a major industry going to a United States Senate candidate who is soliciting funds in a vigorous campaign and saying, well, we've got CITES picketing coming up in the next Congress, and we want a no vote on it. And if you're going to vote no on it, Mr. Senator, we'll contribute $25,000 to your campaign.
This is standard practice.
I say, is there anything wrong with it?
I mean, they'll set you down and ask you. They don't ask you to vote for something.
They
sit down and ask you, what is your position on this?
Right. And if you give the right answers,
if you want their support, you know what the answer is.
I suppose the question there was his...
I think we're
was
really
his
shocking.
Was his judgment influenced by the contribution, or was he given the contribution because his judgment was already...
Well, the trouble is it's a very hazy area. Yeah, of course, it's a very hazy area, which every politician basically has to keep his own conscience on.
Right. The fact remains that chronologically, unless you in detail discuss the interview, usually the contribution is made during the campaign prior to the vote which follows. So for a practical matter, it looks like the vote followed the contribution.
And I don't think that until society is willing to, citizens are willing to subsidize campaigns, I think there is the countervailing reason for political contributions, that without them, politicians will not be able to communicate.
Well, you want to make it clear, for example, under the bribery sections, that we're not talking about political contributions.
No, because I think you get into a real problem when you get a substantial contributor coming in.
Drive a few away, maybe.
What?
Might even drive a few away.
Of course, there you might run into the problem of defining what's a political contribution.
I don't see why you drive any more away than you drive away under our present standards.
Defining the Corrupt Practices Act.
Yeah, but I think that the only...
It's pretty broad in there.
I think we're all agreed, Don, that this is a vast, as written, is a vast improvement over the almost unworkable aspect there. But
Roger mentioned, there are just a handful of bribery cases on the books. State, none of which involved political bribes, did they? I mean, political candidates and that sort of thing.
Of course. What? 3 years ago, you could have said almost the same thing for the Corrupt Practices Act too. Look, it's become one of the biggest. That workman's comp, too big.
Really, there's only one Oregon case, and that was a police sergeant in Salem that took a bribe to leave some slot machines.
Big figures.
You know, there's some commentary. These are the same problems that they wrestled with.
Well, there was a vice trial, which never went, but could have been.
But, you know, it might be helpful to us if we just took a look at this. This is intended draft number 8, and if you'd like, I'll just pick out a few of the comments. They made some of their background discussion on this. They went through this same hassle that we're going through here, trying to limit this.
Who is this now?
This is the Model Penal Code, American Law Institute. And they speak in... Tentative draft number 8, the nature of the benefit, and then they go on to say that bribery laws commonly speak of anything of value with various elaborations intended to make it clear that the value may be present or prospective, etc., etc. And then they go on to say this term has been interpreted broadly enough to include sexual relations solicited by a girl by a law enforcement officer as consideration for his overlooking illegal behavior of her father. Other statutory formulations explicitly encompass advantage or beneficial act as well as anything of value. Then they get to the crux of what we're talking about. Some employ language that would appear to be restricted to pecuniary bribes. Log rolling, i.e., the offer by a legislator or other official to vote or act in a particular way on a public issue in exchange for a reciprocal commitment by another public servant in his official action or decision, has been treated as bribery. That's in California Penal Code. Then they talk about the Model Penal Code definition. Any benefit is defined very broadly to include any gain or advantage, pecuniary or otherwise, or anything regarded by the beneficiary as gain or advantage. The purpose is to reach every kind of offer designed to influence official or political action by extraneous incentives. There would be no doubt, for example, that it would be bribery to offer a public servant a job in private industry as an inducement to make an official decision favorable to the prospective employer. So also, or an employee of a private corporation is a member of a state legislature, It would be bribery for his employer to give him a promotion or a raise in pay as part of a bargain by which the employee legislator casts his vote for or against a particular bill. The necessary breadth of the definition of benefit does, however, create difficulties when applied to bargains made in the process of political compromise. The Council of the Institute and the Advisory Committee were in agreement with the reporters that it would be unrealistic and improper to make all such compromises criminal, even though they may involve offers of appointment or promotion in the public service or promises to vote for a particular measure given in exchange for a like benefit proffered by another. Log rolling is often offensive and sometimes subversive of good government, but it is most frequently an unavoidable technique for bringing persons of differing views together on some program of action. Then they point out that one way that they discussed covering this was to write an exception to their, just like we're talking about. This section shall not apply to representations of a candidate's position on public issues made to influence electors, or arrangements with or among public servants, party officials, or candidates for reciprocal support or commitments in relation to elections, appointments, legislation, or other resolution of matters of public policy or administration, where such arrangements do not involve pecuniary benefit to any participant or violation of any other law, which didn't say much of anything. Anyway, this was rejected, they say, because it might be interpreted as affirmative approval of log rolling and similar practices, and because of the difficulty in drafting a proper line of separation between criminal and exempt activities. Giving up, therefore, the attempt to narrow the scope of benefit by definition or exception, to take account of the foregoing problems, it was decided instead to rely on the word corrupt to characterize the sort of influence to be prohibited.
Why don't we make it illegal in the Senate, but make it okay in the House?
But that's interesting, though, because
executive officials.
Because they say this in their, that's tentative draft number 8, but when you get over to their official approved draft, they've taken corrupt out of it. Because they said it, they felt it was ambiguous.
It helps, though.
Yeah, it does.
As a matter of fact, Section 2 is more restricted than the final Model Penal Code draft, because they use the term any benefit in two particular cases. Judicial administrative proceedings or for violation of a known legal duty.
Well, I think I think there's a lot to say to put in the word corrupt, and I think that there's a lot to say. You read most of the, having done a fair amount of study on this subject, you read most of this on political contributions, the conclusion that most of the people that have written about this thing is that the only sanction that's feasible is exposure. Disclosure bonus, and because we're really trying to legislate a morality here that even the legislature knows that it's just not feasible.
Well, of course, the bribery law being applicable,
I don't know about
the
any individuals and
legislators and politicians, that probably would be a minority in the class that we're talking about. We're talking about the entire judicial system. Talking about the entire administrative and executive system of government also.
Well, the judicial branch, I don't think there's any question there. There is the basic morality is higher because they are, in the first place, they're in a different situation. The judge is sitting up there, he's removed from, he doesn't have to compromise. He calls them, theoretically, he calls them as he sees them, but the legislator, in the very essence of our system, requires him to compromise.
Well, I don't know. Apparently, the Model Penal Code decided to think out on it and just handle it in their commentary. I think they begged the question a little bit. because they say that offers of non-pecuniary benefits, e.g. political support, honorific appointments, are penalized only in connection with attempts to influence judicial and administrative proceedings. I'm not sure that that really gets to the problem, but to say that that political support is a non-pecuniary benefit, but
suppose, well, I mean, if somebody puts up a substantial contribution, he's helping the guy acquire an office which pays a salary.
Well, is it the feeling that we should try and draft some special provision relating to the legislative process?
I think it just relates to the legislative, it relates to the whole political process. I think it's, you can apply pretty high standards to the judiciary, but I think you have an awful tough time with it.
I'm afraid, Lee, my feeling was that, much like they came, that we single ourselves out as above the purview, as they say, it condones log rolling and condones these things. I think the question simply is this.
Well, let
me
say this.
To rest our hope on the fact that the average juror will not be vindictive in this sense. I mean, that's a slender reed, I grant you, but to exempt us from this is just
there's a lot of problems, too.
Well, you have to rely to a great extent on the discretion of prosecutors, too, as far as what we're bringing.
Well, yeah, but that requires removal of some other statutes before we can start relying on discretion of district attorneys in this area, because they feel they have none. For instance, any violation of the Corrupt Practices Act, if they don't prosecute, they lose their job.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Well, I think that kind of statute is ridiculous, but on the other hand side, we don't really entirely, we're trying to draft a code which somewhat limits discretion. It's the age-old problem of trying to legislate a higher morality than society abides by. I would kind of think it would help to stick the word corrupt in there. To give the guy a chance on a meeting.
Like he corruptly offers, refers, or he...
What does corrupt mean?
Well, there's a definition of the word.
Well...
Is it, I don't think it's in 161, is it? Is corrupt? I don't think it's corruptly defined under, yes it is, 161010. Corruptly imports a wrongful design to acquire some pecuniary or other advantage to the person guilty of the act or omission referred to.
We don't need the word corrupt at all.
Just going back down the trail again.
Of course, we can always change the definition of corruptly for the purposes of the revised code. But
what does Daniel say about it?
A wrongful design.
I think we could eliminate part of the problem, certainly if we limit the definition of public servant to in the capacity of performing official duties. Well, I don't know if that does anything.
Well,
corrupt by the dictionary is certainly a lot stronger than just accepting a benefit. To become putrid or tainted, to become debased, to lose virtue.
Putrid is the word I always like.
Yeah.
He putridly offers.
Well, I offer you anything, Harlow, it'll be putrid.
Well, yeah, we could say, or he offers any putrid benefit. Any putrid or pecuniary benefit. Well, of course, we could take the route the Model Penal Code did and rely, and I think that we have to, in some of these sections, rely on the legislative history that would be reflected in our commentary. to show what we're trying to get at.
Yeah, but this gets to a basic philosophical difference I have. I'm not heartened by our Supreme Court's allegiance to legislative history. I realize Justice Rossman in the plain meaning rule and Barrett, or at least the former. But the court retains the question under the plain meaning rule. They don't have to look to legislative intent if it's obvious on the face. And they can just take our commentary and blow it out the window, and they say, we read it, it's obvious, and they got the only one talking is up there. And if they say, upon an agreement or understanding, or corrupt is corrupt, we don't care. Corrupt speaks for itself. We don't need to look at what the commission said. Corrupt.
Is there any possibility under this statute, I just raised this suggestion, corroborating testimony? We discussed that.
Well, yeah, of course. Now, we'll deal broadly with this question of corroboration and accomplices under our article, which we're going to take up this Friday in subcommittee number one on parties, question of accomplices. And there's one section in that draft that provides that a person is not considered an accomplice under a criminal statute if his conduct is necessarily incidental to the act that's prohibited. In other words, that if you're prosecuting somebody for under this section, for bribery, for example, the bribe giver would be an individual whose conduct would be considered as incidental.
Well, what I'm worried about, what concerns me, and I think would probably concern Wally and Harold, is the problem of some SOB hauls you into court and says, look, I took Harold Haas on a 2-week vacation. Understanding was is that we'd go to Canada for some fishing and return for his boat on Bill House Bill so and so. And he voted for House Bill so and so. It's the uncorroborated testimony of the guy who took the bribe or gave the bribe.
Well, I'm less concerned about the big gifts, because I think anybody that gets a 2-week vacation by somebody ought to kind
of
look for that.
First, one thing is, you do have this problem. Both people are guilty, aren't they? Well, maybe I'm really waving a lot of windmills up here.
Well, certainly both people are guilty. The DA may not charge one of them. He come and testify. The DA is magnanimous in charge of both the bribor and the bribee, then he can't testify if he's under charge. But
well, the question we have, there's an existing Oregon statute that says that now a defendant can't be convicted of the uncorroborated testimony of an accomplice.
Corrupt didn't work. How about malicious?
I think it would be a matter of malicious.
Your maliciousness is against the state as opposed to any individual.
Well, somebody bribed me.
I'd be very happy about it.
And increase the benefit for ADC mothers.
Increase workman's comp?
It's more liberal since you have an executive.
Well, I don't think, we only have, as I see, two choices that we have left. And one is to opt out in the relevant parlance, legislators, and I think to be fair, we'd have to do that to city, all the legislative branch, county, city, whatever, opt out the legislative branch, or rely, as Don has pointed out, the Model Penal Code did on our commentary that we clearly do not intend to include log rolling in contributions and others.
Am I way off base? What we really want...
I think you'd have real trouble. Boy, you'd sure get a frown in the press, too.
But what we're really looking at is the state of mind of the individual who offers it and the person who receives it.
Right.
Why they did it. And actually, aren't we talking about malice? I don't know as Webster defines it. State of mind manifested by an intent to commit an unlawful act. Deliberate intention to commit the act. Isn't that kind of what we're getting to here? They didn't take you to dinner and buy you dinner in order to get you to buy your vote.
How about, if you do add the word corrupt in there, at least
you characterize the conduct.
You characterize the conduct. It isn't just a matter of the benefit.
Actually, the reason we didn't use the word corrupt is, in the last paragraph of page 6.
Maybe there's problems with the word or understanding.
Well, it seems to me the problem isn't with the understanding, it's with the pecuniary...
but understanding is kind of a vague term. Somebody suggests to me something... Whereas agreement requires an offer and acceptance.
Yeah, well, according to we have added understanding over the model penal code, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, don't you think we could solve part of this by taking understanding out of sub A? Because there you're talking about, you're really talking about the intent of the offeror here.
It's conceivable you could have two. The two parties, one could be guilty of a crime and one could not be guilty of a crime. In other words, with understanding in here, agreement requires it. But I could give it to you with no intent, that just out of the goodness of my heart, and you could take it with the intent to change your vote. I interrupted you. Take out agreement and whatnot.
Well, yeah, and I think that's just the other side of the coin, what I was going to suggest, and that is that there could be an evil intent on the part of the bribe giver, and no understanding at all, or no agreement on the part of the receiver. In other words, as far as he's concerned, it isn't a bribe, but the intent is to influence his vote or influence his decision in some illegal fashion. So that even without the understanding, as far as the kind of act you're trying to get at, the bribe offerer or the bribe giver is just as guilty, it seems to me, as if there had been an understanding.
Well, doesn't the term agreement...
Whereas you do have to have an agreement by the receiver.
Doesn't that imply a meeting of the minds, though?
Yes. There you, to me, would get the clear intent that if you slip me $100, I'll vote aye. I grant you that the understanding...
Now, this thing can reverse and be in the reverse here. There's probably evidence. You can get a political official who charges somebody with a bribe, trying to bribe them. You know, no better way to make a hero out of himself.
That's right.
Tried to bribe me.
Well, in A, a bond is prospective, potentially prospective, isn't it?
No.
I mean, the guy can turn him down flat and you still have bribery.
I'd delete the word understanding.
Yeah.
What do you think about cutting out or understanding?
Well, it seems to me you could cut them both out in sub A, couldn't you? And handle it the way Michigan did. Because they don't even talk about an understanding with respect to the offering. On page 11 in your blue sheet there.
They talk about the intent.
There, and I think that's really what you're concerned with, is the mens rea, the intent of the bribe offer.
Well, except, though, that here we're in, perhaps this is wrong for me to go to a jury and presume what a jury would say, but the one thing leaving agreement in does mean you'd have to, would seem to me, that there have to be some proof on the part of the prosecutor that they did have some agreement, some true meaning of the minds.
and or an offer to have a meeting of the minds. I grant you that a district attorney could, somebody could try to bribe a district attorney. But if you take out the agreement and understanding, then you're right back where you are with the agreement and understanding, aren't you?
Right. That's what I agree. By having to approve agreement, it seems to me they can't just infer
from the fact that you voted aye.
The fact you voted aye, or it makes it a little tougher, I'm not sure, but it seems to me it makes it a little tougher burden to prove.
I move we take out understanding. Point A.
Or understanding.
Or understanding.
Well, could I ask you this? What if you've got a situation where there isn't any agreement, but I come up to you and I say, here's $1,000, Representative Carson. And I'd be very interested in this bill that's coming up, House Bill 1247. And there's no agreement. And is he going to be not guilty of bribery?
Was there any understanding?
No, there's no understanding there.
Well, then he's not guilty then. In other words, we'd come around and then let's take the fact. I have it in committee where it's not just one vote, but I kill the bill. I never bring the bill up. He wants it dead. And you're able to prove that he paid me $1,000 in mid-session and that bill is now dead and I sat on it. Okay. The point is, for you as a prosecutor to prove that either he was guilty of bribery or I was guilty of accepting a bribe, both of which are contained in here, you'd have to prove that there was an agreement. Now, I don't think it helps you any to say or understanding. The fact that I tabled the bill and the fact he paid me $1,000, you have to infer there was either an agreement or an understanding.
Well, my point is that I think as far as your situation there is concerned, I think the prosecutor should have to prove an agreement to get the bribe receiver, that you took this money on an understanding.
Yeah.
But what about the bribe offer? Is he going to get off scot-free because there wasn't any agreement between the two of you?
He has to seek, though, doesn't he?
Well, what Don means is he's talking about the language instead
he
of
offers.
An agreement or understanding with the intent that the public servant vote.
It seems to me that his intent, the mens rea as far as this actor is concerned, is just as bad.
Yes.
Even though you refused and you said, well, hell, I'm not going to do any such thing. There's certainly no agreement, but as far as what he's done.
Right, but he offers.
I see your point. You could take them both out and put in with the intent to influence such public servant. Well, and then we get back to.
You're right. We could take them out because it's redundant anyway, isn't it?
I think.
All right, let's talk about the briber, the one who's doing it. He offers, confers, that means he comes across with the benefit, or agrees. There's your agreement. In other words, he offers to do it, he does it, or he agrees to do it.
Yeah.
All right, let's put it a little more in context. He offers to do it, he contracts or agrees to do it, or he does it. That'd be that's the three tenses, really. To confer any pecuniary benefit, boom, okay. I offered it to pay you $1,000. I agree to pay you $1,000, and that takes two to tango. Or I pay you $1,000. Three possibilities. I am guilty of the bribery. All right, now we go down to B, the public servant. He asks for $1,000. He accepts $1,000. Or he makes a contract for the $1,000. I think we're all right by taking out upon agreement or understanding of both.
I see. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
God, you're smart.
I think that would do it.
And just replace it with intent.
Yeah. Don't you think? I mean, that's really not helping us around the problem a lot, but I must solicit, and if I solicit it, I'm dead and I ought to be dead. Mm-hmm. I agree, and they can prove that I agreed to kill a bill for the $1,000, and in that case, I ought to be dead. Or I accepted the $1,000 with the intent that my vote or opinion or judgment, public servants, will be influenced by the $1,000. I think that does help it, doesn't it?
Well, I think certainly under A to take it out.
Makes me feel a little bit better. I don't know why it does.
Well, I don't know why it does. Maybe because it gets right back to campaign contribution.
But under A, and then, of course, there we were.
If you give somebody $1,000 for the campaign, you damn well are
really going to influence their vote. I think there is reason. I think we ought to at least maybe suggest it to the full committee. But maybe there ought to be an exclusion in here for campaign contributions. This is the most sensitive area.
How would you get around that, Walt? I give you $1,000. You think I don't want to influence your vote?
Well, I'd have to draw the same distinction that we draw on the campaign route. Perhaps it's wrong to borrow from personal experience, but some people can't understand why anybody contributes to a political campaign. They think so evil of everybody. They think $1 to the Republican Party is buying Nixon's vote on Vietnam. I mean, it'd get absurd. But they think that any cash contribution to a political candidate is evil.
All I'm saying.
And my answer is that if you think evil, then that's your bag. But if you think you can buy me for $1, or you're going to warp me for, of course, I've never gotten $1,000 contribution, so maybe I'm
talking about the offeror, the guy who offers to confer any pecuniary benefit upon a public servant, with the intention that such public servant's vote opinion, judgment, action, such and such shall be influenced thereby.
Well, I think we run into the old problem again of free speech on campaign contributions.
What's that, the right to contribute, put your money where you want it?
Yeah, I offer you $5,000, Wally Carson, on the basis that if you're elected, you'll support our program. Now, is there really anything corrupt about that?
I don't think so. But it only becomes corrupt when you get down to the nitty-gritty, because I offer you $1,000, Harl Haas, to run a good Democrat campaign, and if elected, be a responsible
no,
or don't
no,
you?
No, let's go right down to the positive measure. My group is going to introduce a bill next session which provides for situs picketing. We will contribute $5,000 to your campaign if you promise that if you're elected, you will support that measure. Now, really, is that corrupt?
It's the distinction between campaign funds and personal
funds. As long as what's corrupt about it, or what is an honest area, a legitimate area of public concern, is that the people know that the guy comes in with those obligations.
Well, that specific problem would be avoided because a person in that capacity would not be a public servant. People running for public office are not.
Well, he may be if he's running for re-election.
For re-election.
Then he would be. He would already be holding office.
Right. Most of the people who run for public office are running for re-election.
I don't think you can take out
about
agreement or understanding. Because if you do that, then you're making the individual who contributes to a campaign fund for an incumbent officer with the hope of influencing your vote.
I think we ought to take political contributions out of this thing. On the theory that the Corrupt Practices Act are designed to handle that problem.
Yeah, but we've got to admit, though, don't we, though, Lee, the Corrupt Practices Act, in fact, does not handle that problem. Now, or as we, any of us, intend to design it, the Corrupt Practices does not do it.
I think as long as it requires disclosure, it does. The only problem with the Act today is that it doesn't require prior disclosure, but actually,
so the
giving inspection
is no crime. What you're saying is, it's no crime. We got to leave it out because there's no crime involved with doing it.
Well, because I think you're treading on free speech grounds. I think I've got a right to ask a candidate. If I'm going to support a candidate, I think I've got a right to ask him, will you support this measure?
Well, I agree, but
I mean,
if you take the thing, you take the example that you ask me whether I'm for situs picketing, and I say yes, and that's exactly your program, so you lay $5,000 on me, no problem.
Well,
what if I'm no right now, and you say, but if you change to yes, here's $5,000?
I think that's probably all right.
I still see nothing wrong with it. That's my
point. Well, you wouldn't do that. You'd say, you know, if you change your mind, come see us.
Well, of course, now you're making the Marion County Conservative very nervous.
No, but this is the, I think, this
it's
is a proper
this is a, is it any different than the voter, just an ordinary voter who's got only one thing to contribute, and that's his vote, and he comes up and he asks you, will you support this measure?
I'll vote for it if you will.
And he says, I will vote for you on only one condition. You vote you're against fluoridation. Now, what's your position on fluoridation? You agree to vote against fluoridation. Well, it happens time and time again.
Well, it's a question of degree, I suppose.
Well, that's another point. Voters were deliberately excluded from
Let's suppose instead of a yacht, it's his vote that he's promising.
All right, suppose.
And it certainly is an economic benefit. John Steelhammer got into the legislature by one vote, and the year he became speaker.
Suppose you got a guy who comes up, you got campaign. I mean, this is, campaign contributions aren't all of a campaign. You've got all kinds of free labor. I say to Wally Carson, I'll work my tail off in your campaign. I'll ring every doorbell in this town.
Sure.
But on these conditions only.
I want to know how you stand on fluoridation.
Well, I frankly think we're anticipating a lot of problems won't come up because our current bribery law is broader than this, and
I disagree. I feel very strongly for one thing. One of the problems with our present criminal law is that we're legislating a lot of morality that society doesn't adhere to. This is all the way through our criminal code. And I think here is an area of conduct which we don't even think really. I think when you think it through, you don't find that there's anything evil about it. And don't give me this idea that it isn't going to come up. No, just as Wally said, who would have ever brought a case under the Corrupt Practices Act?
It's interesting that they do use the term corruptly under our present bribery statute.
Yes,
most of
the legislation does.
But the definition of corrupt really doesn't help you much, so when you look at it, a wrongful design to acquire some pecuniary or other advantage to the person guilty of the act.
I do not see what's wrong with taking out, because here you're talking about a felonious conduct. Taking out of this statute the problem of campaign contributions, I think. A lot of the problem and say this is a problem for the Corrupt Practices Act.
Because it can be criminal there as well.
It can be criminal. I think we'll ultimately come to a full disclosure law in this state, is what we're going to do.
Yes, but.
Which is the only effective.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Lee, but let's not say that what we're doing is putting it under the Corrupt Practices Act. What we're really saying is the Corrupt Practices Act, and I think I agree with what you're saying, and that is the Corrupt Practices Act's sole result is going to be exposure. It's going to be a full reporting statute.
Yeah.
And any attempt to limit contributions, to control expenditures, the whole bit, is a bag. It's no good. You're going to have to do it by disclosure.
We raise serious, I think there's serious constitutional questions raised when you say that someone cannot.
But what we're really saying then is if you disclose, the disclosure is or not is the crime. If we take it out of here, we're saying, and this is your point, that I have every right in the world to say I'll give you $1,000 if you vote no on fluoridization, as I do to say I'll vote for you. If you vote for fluoridation. That's interesting, but I think that's a good point. And that goes right to the heart of this, doesn't it, Don?
Somehow,
really?
Somehow we're not able to. You know, the problem is that we're not able to distinguish between campaign funds and
deal with the same problems. Obviously, no one is going to report a bribe as a contribution under the Corrupt Practices Act.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to report
most of the contributions there are bribes. Bribes under the definition of the statute. Or they approach it.
Well, what I mean is the Corrupt Practices Act would never disclose a bribe under any type of reporting procedure.
No, the point is, though, the Corrupt Practices Act discloses that group XYZ has supported this candidate. And that's all we can do. That gives the voters the knowledge that this guy has got some tags on him, and through the public debate, if it's,
well,
you can say, in debate, I say that Wally Carson has promised his vote on this measure, and he might well, very well, come back and say, I sure and hell have.
Well, then really what you're saying is, if you put the bribe in the category of a, if it falls in the category of a campaign contribution and is disclosed, then it's no longer a bribe, or cannot be a bribe, which is what Roger's saying, is that if it's a campaign contribution, it can't be a bribe. Disclosure then takes what would otherwise be a bribe, makes it a campaign contribution, if you,
of course, the utilization,
doesn't in fact go into the campaign.
You know, I think there's a difference between a campaign contribution and a personal gift, too. Don't you? I mean,
well,
that's what we're talking about. I mean, you think of the bribe, you think of the $5,000 that goes in your personal checking account.
Yeah, but how about, what's his name in Congress? I realize
Tom Dodd.
Yeah, gee whiz. Well, they did it to him through the campaign.
Of course, he spent it.
Well, yeah, but it was a question of what he did with the funds after he got them, wasn't it?
Yeah, he spent them.
Yeah. Well, I think that,
that's true.
And this is not meant in any criticism of Bob, because we know that every one of us know that practically anybody that's in Congress who doesn't have independent means has got some kind of a fund going. I think Bob's just been more honest than anybody else. But I think that kind of fund raises more problems. I don't see any free speech problem there, because the guy is in office. But when he's running for office, the election is a free exchange of ideas. And you're saying basically that it's wrong for people to render their political support on the basis of what ideas they want invoked in the public policy.
Well, I'm glad we got this one taken care of.
Kind of a troublemaker.
Well, since any happiness, we're doing much better on it than some of the others.
Well, we can draft an exception, making it clear that this area doesn't apply to political contributions. Political parties or people running for political office.
Why don't we try that on the full committee?
What, drafting an exception?
How do you feel about that?
I'm not too enthusiastic about
it. Contributions reported in accordance with OR-blank. And your unreported contributions would follow on.
Well, Don, do you agree with me that you couldn't take out of number one both the words agreement and understanding?
I mean under...
Under A, I mean. 1A. That if you do that, you'd have a person who made made pure and simple campaign contribution with the hope of influencing the vote of the recipient, he would have committed a crime.
Yeah, incidentally, this should be, there's another typo here. There shouldn't be any one up there at the top. And A, B, C, and D should be 1, 2, 3, and should be 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Say, by the way, can we turn off the tape recorder?
No, but we'll edit the minutes.
You kept using my name, that's why, in all your examples.
Under the first paragraph, I think it can be taken out of there.
Under both of those?
No, I think under your first paragraph, where we're talking about the offeror,
mm-hmm.
I think it can be taken out, but I think there should be some language of intent. Intent
with
to
the
influence.
Intent.
With
such
the intent.
Public servants.
Well, then...
Well, Harold,
but I give you five, you're running for the legislature, I give you $2,000 campaign contribution with the intent to influence your vote. And I'm happy to tell the world. And we're going to make that criminal?
No. No, I don't think we're making any, any more criminal than our present criminal statute.
Well, yeah, but
this argument doesn't...
we all, at least the three of us, or I think, let's put that to rest. That present statute could be just thrown out. It's no good, and I think the reason that hasn't been brought is that it's so obviously in there. So I think that we all agree with you that this is, as written, far superior to the old one. The question is this the best we can do?
Well, no, I, to answer that, I'm not sure I can answer that, whether this is the best we can do or not. But
well, I do think if you remove the political
contributions, I think the only way to resolve that is that political contributions are almost always made with the intent to influence. Mm-hmm. And so that it would be better if you'd have to show an actual
agreement.
You understand
we wouldn't admit that generally, but...
Then you can go to that point. You can argue that one.
Well, the ordinary guy that's just a good, solid Republican, a good, solid Democrat, is intending to influence.
That's right. To make it a Republican legislature or a Democrat legislature. And the very essence of our whole political arena is that I want good Republicans or good Democrats.
Yeah, the guy says, he says to you, Wally Carson, he says, now listen, if I elect you up there, are you going to go up there and be some maverick, or are you going to vote with the Republican Party?
Right. Boom. He's trying to bribe.
We find that Wally Carson has voted straight down the party line. Of course, he does go south once in a
while. Very rarely.
Well, it seems to me what you get into, though, if you try to write these exceptions into here, or if you say that this is not going to apply to campaign contributions, and every time a case should come along that might be a legitimate case of bribery, you're going to have this... As a defense. Well, this was a bribery. I'm making a campaign contribution.
Yes, but you have a timing element.
You have a very definite timing element.
In other words, all right, Mr. Candidate, how come you didn't report that as a campaign contribution? Now, maybe we got the hole that Harold Roger talked about.
This is what I was suggesting, is we accept those contributions reported pursuant to the election code, and if they aren't reported, then they could come within the statute.
Matter of fact, I believe it's Michigan has a statute which we have not drafted on making it a crime not to report a bribe offer.
What a few states.
Well, I'm not sure I'd get to the issue.
The whole justification for the exception is that we are saying there are non-criminal sanctions to take care of this conduct, which involve essentially two elements. One, disclosure, and the wrath of public opinion. And that is the only effective way we can take care of it. It's just not appropriate. It's not an appropriate criminal matter in my mind.
Well, I think there's no great disagreement there. I think that we all agree that the campaign contribution, whether it be work or vote or dollars, is not what we're talking about the bribery
right, yeah,
here.
I think we're all agreed there.
Now the question is, do we opt it out specifically or do we resolve it by commentary? Now let's take a poll. How do you want to specifically statedly, presently, that this would be your leaning, right? Harold, how do you feel?
Well, I like to have a clean statute, but I worry about relying on commentary. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Apparently you share the same concern about the commentary that I do. This has come up before, and perhaps those of us that joined late should have come early, but I'm a very reluctant to rely too heavily on a commentary.
Well, I am too. As a matter of fact, that's been my position with the commission right from the beginning, that if in doubt, let's put it in the statute and not rely too heavily. But this might be an exception to that, this particular because of the nature.
I don't think you can put it in the commentary because to me, you'd be right in the legislative intent in there that the statute doesn't say.
All right, let's, for discussion purposes, add an exception. Now, would it apply both to what now is 1 and 2? Yes. It'd have to, wouldn't it?
Sure. Suppose I go to the Teamsters Union and say, look, I will support Sidus Piketty.
Why don't you use the AOI every now and then?
All right. Well, AOI doesn't make gifts. It's an association. All right, and I go to Georgia Pacific, who's...
I support the anti-pollution, no pollution or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want your contribution.
All right. Usually
that's about as obvious, that's about as, how often does that happen in the campaign?
Okay, let's, apparently there is agreement, reluctant at least on my part, but I can't think of anything better, to add an exception to the application toward campaign contributions. And the draft, the alternative would be couched in such phrase that if a disclosure is made under the Corrupt Practices Act, then in effect it's not a bribe. That's bad. I mean, that's exactly what I want to avoid. It is saying it's a bribe unless you report it and then it's a campaign contribution. And that's
it's not as easy as that.
Because if they report it as a campaign contribution, they have to continue to report where that money goes, where it is, what's happened to it. And if they spend it for something other than campaign, they have to report it to the IRS. And
I think that
it's
this
not
does
an easy thing to handle.
No, I think it does have the advantage of a disclosure, and then you run it through your campaign, and you can't go into your own pocket, for instance.
Yeah.
But I think
the exception would be very simple to write. It just says, notwithstanding, this does not apply to political contributions reported in accordance with ORS, whatever the section is that requires reporting.
What do you think, Don? Roger nodded aye.
Okay.
Okay, let's... okay, now, what about log rolling and these other things? Do we leave that subtlety to the commentary?
I think so. I can't imagine anyone starting...
Would you like to see something in the commentary that...
I think maybe it'd be better just not to say anything any place about it. No, I don't mean that we should sweep it under the rug, but I don't think there's any...
In the commentary.
I don't think there's any problem there, and
I don't see some...
Well, of course, there's a lot of precedent for that. You know, these other states have done it without...
Didn't you say California said it was subject to the act?
And there are California cases that have held it subject. But
well, as I say, it'd be great with us. If I ever get in the Senate, I might disagree with that. But boy, I'm all for it now. Because I'm the loggy, I know.
But as a matter of fact, in the...
Oh, Ollie, we can get your belt through.
But Roger's commentary now on page 7 cites some Michigan commentary. Page 7. You see, on the other hand, a broad interpretation of the benefits described in section 118 could also be used to prohibit log rolling. And it goes on to say, obviously, bargaining of this nature should not be covered by the bribery statute, et cetera, et cetera. And it goes on to quote, now, it's in the commentary now, indirectly.
Yeah, they're talking about their use of the term pecuniary benefit, and they interpret that not to, would not cover log rolling.
Well, I'd be a little bit more willing to rely on the good sense of the courts.
Yeah, I think I would too. Because the matter of proof would be extremely difficult.
Yeah, you aren't going to have any guys coming in and say...
My God, you'd have to have a swarm of investigators in every legislative session. It's sort of a parade of the horribles is conjuring up here.
Problem with campaign contributions, I don't think it's a parade of the horribles.
No, it's
getting to be more and more of a real one.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think the advantage of putting it in here removes what could be a very bad situation by the next corrupt practice charge, adding bribery to it and going down a man's list of campaign contributions and charging every contributor with bribery. Under our present little gem that we have.
Yeah, it could happen, I suppose, under our present statute. You got a wild-eyed prosecutor.
Well, it isn't even a wild-eyed prosecutor. It's a guy who just in the midst of a campaign wants to make that.
That's right.
Well, yeah, but to get a criminal charge going, he's going to have to through some DA someplace.
Yeah, he's got a DA in his own party.
Not anymore. He took care of that.
Oh.
Would you like to take a 2 or 3 minute break here before we go on? You
want no.
You wouldn't.
No, I'd like to go back to work.
No, go ahead. Let's. Well, are we satisfied what we're going to do? Then, are there any other comments about 3 and 4 under section 2?
I don't think you decided what you were going to do on 1 about taking up
agreement or understanding or just one of those.
Well.
What is an unlawful?
Yeah, Carl made a good point, I think, leaving upon an agreement at least in, a fellow offers a bribe, in his own intent, that it will influence, I as a lawyer contribute to some layman's campaign, of course we've removed that though.
Yeah, well here's where I think it comes in. If you take an agreement.
Yeah, but let's take campaign out of it now.
Yeah, I am. I'm saying that he sends, it's Christmas time and he sends a case of whiskey.
And his intent is to influence.
It's to influence your vote in the next session. Do we want that conduct to... We want that to fall in within the ambit. I think if you take out agreement,
then it would fall in. I think you're right.
Fall
the
in.
Agreement or the understanding, you take that out, it makes it unilateral.
That's right. When you get upon agreement,
it means he's saying, you know, I like to send.
How do you
a case
offer
if,
upon an agreement?
Well, he's saying I'll send you a case of whiskey if.
Yeah, but how do you offer? How do you make an offer? Then
I mean, isn't a crime offering?
Yeah. Well, then there yeah, can be no agreement. There can be no crime unless there is in fact agreement.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think, as far as the offeror is concerned, that it's just as criminal for him to make the offer whether there's an agreement or not.
Sure, I agree. True. I think now that we've taken
well,
pain out of it.
I mean, my point, my distinction is this: is he offering to give you something if you will indeed perform, as opposed to offering. On the offering just to give you something.
Well, if that's all he's doing, then it wouldn't be criminal. But if he offers with the intent, with the criminal intent, then it's bribery.
I think it should be he offers or confers or agrees to confer any pecuniary bona fide with the intent that the public servant thereby be influenced, public servant's vote thereby be influenced.
Okay, well, the case of whiskey on Christmas Day with the intent to hope to influence your vote is going to be subject to this statute.
That's right.
Right.
Or if he offers to send you.
So we have a problem. Dear Harold, I'm forwarding my separate package a case of whiskey.
With no intent.
No.
Our hope.
Certainly glad that you've agreed to vote for.
Sincerely yours, Ken Rankin.
Okay.
Ken sends it to every member of the legislature.
All right. Don wants a break.
What do you want to vote for, Ken?
Don wants a break, so before we break, we're agreed that we'll take out 1 and put in 1, 2, 3, 4 for A, B, and C. We'll eliminate. Upon agreement or understanding, and agreement or understanding, and substitute with the intent that the public servant vote, opinion, so on, capacity will be thereby influenced. Now, under 2, we don't have it. No, we do have it. Upon an agreement or understanding. Do we leave it in there?
Well, I think in that case, they should have to prove an agreement.
Okay. Any disagreement? We can transfer.
What? Why?
Well,
suppose I say, Wally, if you can get some friends together and get $50,000, we'll give you a favorable opinion.
You tell me to go to fly a kite. They still should be. I mean, the solicitation is a crime, I think.
It should be.
Yeah, I think it should be too. And I think that the way that Michigan and New York have used that phrase, upon an agreement, I think that modifies, agrees to accept any pecuniary benefit.
Yeah, I tend to believe that, but I think if you just take out the upon the agreement, worded the way we did the A, it's the intent element.
Well, let's take it out and give it some more thought. We'll discuss it fully with the full committee.
You're figuring a phone and agreement out, huh?
Yeah, and substitute with the intent.
And you're taking out or understanding?
Yes. Because mm-hmm. otherwise you have the problem, well, it's the bilateral, unilateral. And,
yeah.
And in the number two paragraph, you have solicitation. Now, do you want to, must you have an agreement? Before you can solicit.
I solicit
you.
Wally,
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried. I'm worried about the accepting.
I agree with you on the solicitation.
Well, but if he accepts with the intent that his old opinion be
better. Listen, you know as well as I do, if he accepts, you've got him.
Well, in the case of non-acceptance, Don, you're attempted to. Statutes on attempt would apply, wouldn't it?
No,
because you're picking up inchoate crimes right in here.
Well, by the definition, we're saying that one is as bad as the other.
Yeah.
But
because solicit and offer are both both inchoate in the sense that.
That's right.
Don't you think that?
But our definition of attempt would be broad enough to get into this kind of conduct if we didn't have anything in here, I think.
Let me just roll it around, just for kicks, see what you think. Unlike the other two here, I haven't had this happen. But let's say it's Christmas Day, and a gift of some substance, less than $100 valued, arrives by messenger at the front door, and it's from someone that the legislator has known as a lobbyist. He says, Merry Christmas. Now, there's a problem. Let's say he accepts the gift. Without, on his part, open manifestation is going to affect any of his votes.
How about if you say he solicits with the intent or accepts? See, you have him agrees to accept upon an agreement. Now that obviously is redundant, isn't it?
I think you're always going to have somewhat of a problem with the gratuity type of thing you're talking about. I don't see how you can avoid it unless we define pecuniary benefit to be of a substantial nature or put some dollar figure on it, and
well,
I agree.
Well, you have an open season sometime between the 15th and 26th of December, you can do whatever you want.
I can see that
it'd be busy.
You go out some night with some lobby and says, whoops, we're up to $45.
Yeah, the rest is on you, honey.
Well, whose intent is it? Is it the under the second one, where he accepts, the public service accepts any pecuniary benefit with the intent? His intent that his vote, opinion, judgment, action. So it's going to be a subjective test.
Well, in the first one, you're prosecuting the bribe or.
And the second one.
The bribee or yeah.
Even though he knows that it's the intent of the offeror that it affect his vote, if it's not his intent to have it affect his vote when he accepts it, it's okay.
Sure. He might have a jury.
It's ludicrous
jury
is what
problem.
It is.
Well, let's face it. If he accepts it, he's going to get nailed. I wonder if most of the cases come up really
seems
all these
to me
cases
by using
come up
the term with the intent and getting rid of agreement, no. You're going to have a very difficult time to prove a bribe if he hasn't taken the action yet.
Well, you know what I think we ought to do with this?
I got suggestions, but I didn't want to...
No, I think we ought to break this down into separate sections. And I think we should split off bribe offering or bribery from bribe receiving, and then bribe receiving, then further break it down into a subsection so that we have solicitation and in a separate subsection. And then in a separate subsection, we have accepting or agreeing, if you feel both are necessary, but the acceptance upon an understanding or agreement. So that it clearly modifies only the acceptance. And I think we'd...
You go out and solicit.
That's bad in itself.
That's
clear.
That's
no right. That's
there.
As bad as my offering to bribe you without any agreement. Mm-hmm. You're soliciting me to bribe you is just as bad,
that's
it seems
right.
to me.
That's right.
But you're accepting a gift from me shouldn't be bribery. If I send you a gift and you just take it and there's no understanding or agreement that there's going to be any quid pro quo. I think if we structure this in terms of...
I think your point's well taken.
Most of the cases that are going to arise in this area are either offers or solicitations.
Because the others never be known.
Consummated. Well, you got both parties.
Yeah, you got both parties tied up. The chance of them getting the whistleblower over. Okay, do we all agree to that then? That A will stand by taking out upon agreement understanding. And then two, we'll break that into two paragraphs. One, solicitation will stand, solicit with the intent, that is, so such and such. And then part B under there will be accept or agrees to accept any pecuniary benefit upon the agreement or understanding. Mm-hmm. Or some such thing. Mm-hmm. In other words, if he solicits at all, he's had it.
God, we've done a lot of that today.
This is about par, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we're picking up speed here. We're two paragraphs so far.
You should have seen us go through sex offenses.
Yeah, but that was fun. We enjoyed that, though.
Come to your first meeting of a committee, you should keep your mouth shut and listen.
Well, none of us did. So. Okay, three, before we break, let's hit three and four.
Now, we could put those defenses under a separate section, just call them bribery defenses.
That's a good idea.
One and two.
Now, what is three? Is that a misdemeanor?
Where are we
three
now?
Is
you mean section three?
Oh, is that what you were saying, Wally?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We're still on
C.
I'm sorry.
It's C and D, paragraph C and D that we renumbered three and four, or out of four or something. Suspense the defendant conferred or agreed. In other words, the bribe or has got an entrapment defense, in fact, that if the public official extorted.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
That's pretty bad, but I suppose, is that pretty well standard, Roger?
Yes. That same provision was adopted in New York and Michigan.
Okay. Paragraph D or paragraph 4, you can't bug out because you have assumed office or you lack jurisdiction or anything.
You know, it's an impossibility. You were just saying the impossibility
depends
on why.
Okay, well, with those amendments we approved, then section two, we'll go back to one. Now let's go on to three and let's break for a few minutes, 10 minutes or so. Come back to three and see if we can get through. Are we just on bribery?